everybody. Welcome to the Canine Connection Podcast. Actually, today, Lori is going to do the introduction to this episode. Hey, everybody. Today, we have a really awesome guest interview with Danette Chorney. She's agreed to come on and talk to us and talk to all you guys. She is an AKC Rally Obedience Judge. She is a competitor in Rally, a competitor in Obedience, a competitor in CDSP Obedience, and AKC Obedience, along with a whole string of other sports this woman does. We are really, really fortunate to have her on today, and I'm going to hand it over to her. She's going to go ahead and start by just telling you guys a little bit about herself, how long she's been a judge, a competitor, who her dogs are, and what sport she's currently participating in now. Welcome, Danette.
And if there's anything that she wants to share about her life outside of dogs, because I know
that's right.
Hard to believe there is a world outside of dogs, but
that is
crazy talk. All right. Well, thank you both for having me join you today. And I've been very much enjoying all of your podcast episodes, so I'm very honored and happy to join you. So this has been really cool. So I started pretty late in life with my whole dog journey. I didn't grow up with dogs as a kid. You know, we had cats and we had, you know, gerbils and things like that, but I didn't have a dog until very, you know, well into my adult life. And I got, you know, a dog. I was married at the time to someone who had had dogs growing up and was very dog savvy. And it just kind of clicked with me. And my first dog was a Labrador Retriever. And I just really enjoyed watching him learn and teaching him stuff, teaching him how to do things that I didn't even know dogs could do. I was fortunate early on. I live in New England. I lived in Massachusetts at the time, and I was so fortunate to be able to be a student of Esther Zimmerman, who you've had on your podcast as well.
Yep.
And I was just, you know, going along my merry way, and I was repeatedly taking the Beyond Basic Obedience class with my dog, just because every week it was so different. And the instructor was just so creative and coming up with different things that we hadn't done before. And Esther came up to me at the end of one of my classes, and she said, "You're going to be in my class next week." And so I said, okay, I didn't really think anything of it. I just figured, you know, she was another instructor who taught the same type of stuff. So the next week I go into the other ring, and so she was like, okay, so this is competition obedience. And I stood up and I grabbed my stuff and I said, "I'm in the wrong class." And she goes, "No, you're not. Sit down." And she was like, give this a try. I think you're going to like it. And boy, was she ever right. It just clicked with me, and he was such a good boy. I had the world's easiest first dog. You know, I couldn't have ordered one up on Amazon any better than he was. He was so patient and so willing to let me make 100,000 mistakes and still want to be there and say, okay, are you ready now to teach me the right way? But yeah, we had a great, fun journey together. He was my first dog and my first UD. And because I got into it rather late. I mean, he was probably 8 or 9 years old when I got his UD.
That's pretty impressive, though, yeah. Danette. Your very, you know, first dog to, yeah, UD. That's, yeah, pretty incredible.
And back then, Rally wasn't a real big thing yet. Because we're talking like in 2002 is when I got him.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so it wasn't a really big popular thing yet. So I got started in obedience first and learned about Rally. I moved out of Massachusetts. Well, I moved from Eastern Massachusetts to Western Massachusetts. and kind of had to start all over again and, you know, find a training center. And because I wanted to continue what I was doing, I was totally hooked at that point. And boy, was I fortunate again to fall into the tutelage of Tibby Chase. She was my next instructor.
Yeah.
And she introduced me to the sport of rally.
And just to interrupt, Tibby Chase is an instructor of obedience, and I think she does rally too. And she's an AKC judge of rally and obedience.
Correct.
For everyone out there.
And yep. she was also instrumental in basically building the sport of rally. Provided a lot of feedback. She was like one of the biggest fans of rally and pushing for it to get accepted by the AKC. And so she was an early steward of the whole process. And I took classes from her for obedience and rally, and she kept poking me, when are you going to become a judge? You would be a really great judge. You really should be a judge. And I was just like, yeah, right. What do I know about, you know, the grander scheme of things? And it wasn't until I started showing in rally that I really understood and got the notion that I wanted to become a judge.
So you started with obedience. What made you try rally? Just like, oh, I'll try it, or did Tibby make you do it?
No, it was actually, I had picked up my next dog who was a rescue lab, and I was looking for a canine good citizen class for him. And I found one in the, I think it was like the ASPCA or something in downtown Springfield. They have a shelter down there and they taught classes, and Elise Gouge was the instructor. So I wanted to get him into a CGC class down there. And she also told me about rally. You know, we did some playing around with rally. And it was just really, really fun to be able to talk to your dog, to be able to work with your dog. And I liked the variety of it because it's never the same. Now, even if you show to the same judge, the course is going to be different. The skills are going to be a different mixed bag every time you go out. And that really appealed to me. And so I started learning rally in between getting obedience titles on my two Labradors. And when I first started showing my first dog, Skyler, in rally, RAE was as far as you could go. That was the highest you could get. You could do RAE 2, 3, 4, whatever. But, you know, by the time I got to RAE with him, he was like 10, 11. So I got my RAE and I was like, okay, we've reached the apex, you know, and I ended up retiring him. But I kept going with my younger dog because he loved it, I loved it, and we just, you know, enjoyed learning and, you know, getting to know the sport. And for me personally, I am a complete nerd. When I learn things, I'm the one who will take the instruction manual and read it cover to cover. I took the rally rule book and I read it word. I read every word in that. The rule.
Wow. Wow. And, yeah. Wow.
Because you are a nerd.
Because I have not done that with the obedience rule book.
There's so much good information in there that a lot of people don't get because they don't read, especially like a lot of people will read the appendix in the back that has the signs and the descriptions, right? Mm-hmm. This is what it is. This is how you do it. But there's a lot of good information in the judging guidelines chapter in the chapter 2, which outlines minor deductions versus major deductions. You know, I was questioned. I mean, I've been judging now for 13 years, something like that. And I was questioned by an exhibitor about a month ago when I judged at a trial. saying, since when is walking by a sign an NQ? And I'm like, well, since the inception of the sport. And I literally told her, it's in chapter two, it's on page 36. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the second bullet from the bottom. You know,
wow. And that's
this is how much of a rally nerd I am. So, and I got really into it. And when I first started showing back then, and this is kind of the way AKC does it, whenever they introduce new programs, mm-hmm. they grandfather in the judges and the evaluators that, you know, you've already come thus far, right? Mm-hmm. So they came out with AKC Fit Dog. Well, CGC evaluators are now CGC evaluators. We're Trick evaluators. We're Start Puppy evaluators. We're Fit Dog evaluators. You know, and it's like they just keep, that's the way they do it. If you were a judge before, you're still a judge. Congratulations. Now you can do this. So what they did with all of the obedience judges is they said, congratulations, you're now a rally judge.
Oh.
And I don't know how much training there was to be had back then. I don't know. It wasn't really like the age of webinars and Zoom meetings and things like that. That was back when we had in-person judges seminars and things like that. So what we found, myself and the folks I trained with, what we found is we would go to trials. And the judges weren't that familiar with the rule differences.
Right.
You know, like the definition of heel position or, you know, when it says minimum requirements are not met. Well, the dog didn't lie all the way down on the down. So I'm going to NQ you, you know, things like that. And after showing for a while to all sorts of different judges, you figured out which ones were really on board with the rally program and which ones just, you know, didn't
want to be bothered with.
They didn't want to be bothered to learn.
Yeah, right.
And that's fine. You know, that's an individual choice. But, you know, it's, and I know the sport was originally intended as a stepping stone to obedience. And I think from my perspective, it has morphed into very much a sport of its own.
That's how I feel too.
Yeah.
That's how I feel too.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. There's a lot of overlapping skills, you know, and you know, getting the dog to do a front, for example. You know, a front is a front is a front. But how it gets scored in rally versus scored in obedience is very different. Heel position is not the same. And when I teach my students, I always get somebody who goes, really? Wow, mm-hmm. I never knew that. Heel position is different in rally than it is in obedience. And a lot of people don't read that deep into the rule book to pick up on that.
I feel like not like I have massive rally experience at all. So I'm not even pretending I do, but a little I've done. I felt like obedience to rally was a relatively easy jump. Like there's a couple little skills I had to teach Zeal, a lot I had to teach myself. But because I had a dog that was fully trained on engagement and like, I didn't feel like it was a super hard transition. I feel like it's a harder transition from rally to obedience. Would you agree with that or not?
I do agree. Because I think a lot of times people become, you know, or they either become dependent on it or they choose to be dependent on verbal support of the dog in the rally ring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sit, come front, go around, spin. You know, wait, stay, down, sit, come front, jump. You know, there's a lot of verbal cues in rally that turns into a lot of chatter. And it's a lot of rapid fire commands for the dogs. And I think when you go from rally to obedience and, you know, everybody's like, oh, now I can't say anything to my dog. It's a culture shock for them, but it's just, it's I think that's what just makes the sports different. Mm-hmm. Because now I'm not going to say anything to you. So now, you know, from my perspective, with my current 5-year-old lab, Enzo, I started in rally with him mm-hmm. because he was a lot of dog. And I needed to give him the experience of doing, you know, a competitive sport with him, but without it meaning, you know, like putting 2 tons of pressure on both of us, you know. And it's like, if we don't cue, that's fine. We'll cue tomorrow. We'll cue the next time, whatever. And I did a lot of experimenting with him, you know, doing hand signals only, not talking with him, mm-hmm. Not using verbal cues or using verbal cues for just some things to see what is his understanding, what's his level of understanding. You know, do you know it only if I see it? And, you know, and I found in environments that were really overwhelming for him, he would be so Johnny on the spot responding to verbals that I was impressed. I was seriously impressed about how much multitasking he can do in his brain and still, you know, come out of the ring with a really decent score. And he just impressed me. And but it's funny because I do ask I pull this question from a lot of obedience people, high level obedience competitors, and I'll say, have you ever done rally? The response is almost always the same. They say, God, no, that's way too hard. Because it's, you know, they're thinking of it inside their context of, you know, like you said, Petra, the level of engagement you require. They're thinking of it in that context, and they don't want to drop their criteria for performance. So they're saying in that, at that level of engagement, it's just too hard.
Yeah. So, I mean, I feel like for me, if I have a young dog and it's going to be a competition obedience dog, right? The reason I don't want to do rally with it is because it feels a little choppy. And like, if I need to glance away, my dogs will read that as a disconnect because I teach engagement to such a high level.
Right.
Having said that, with a dog that understands engagement, is fully trained like Zeal, and quite frankly, I had never done it. So who am I to say, right? It's like you're saying things about something you've never done. So I'm not going to lie. In the past, I've had been like, ugh, rally, whatever, until I did it. And I'm like, oh, this is kind of, first of all, Zeal thought it was the most fun thing on the planet Earth. And we got to do it together. And I'm like, I kind of like this. And I realized that really the biggest part with respect to engagement fell on me because I should not have to stare at the sign. If I get to the sign and I have to actually read it in that moment, then that's going to create a disconnect. And my dog's going to be like, what the hell are you doing? Right. So I was like, well, really, if I were to do this properly and be the best teammate for my dog, that's just me. Right. I should learn the signs so that I should pretty much have it memorized with respect to the course. I'm not saying that's easy, but that's what I should be able to do. Just like on an agility course, you don't stop and go, oh, wait, which way am I going? You better have it memorized, right? And mm-hmm. what handling am I going to do? I have to have that memorized. So I should get to understand the sign to the point where if I see it at a glance, my brain shouldn't have to go, okay, call front, finish left. No, it should go, okay, boom, 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 right?
Right.
So I should have to memorize the signs to that point. I should understand them to that point. I should memorize the course enough so that if I just kind of glance up to orient myself or as a quick reminder, but that's all it should be. Right. And, you know, Zeal held me accountable. If I looked at a sign too long, he's like, dude, what are you doing? So I feel like with an adult dog, I could totally do it. And if I did it that way, I don't think it would have a negative impact on my obedience, my competition obedience. Right. And if I were a more experienced rally person, like let's say I do a lot of rally with Zaina towards the end of her career, then I get a younger dog. Well, then no, then I would have a better feel for course flows and understand. And maybe I could take a younger dog in because maybe I could glance away and it wouldn't be a problem.
Yep. Lori, have you ever done a rally?
Yeah, that's actually what I started Mary Elizabeth in, was rally. That's all I did was rally.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, I started with rally. And not until I actually watched Obedience up at the Big E and saw somebody get their utility title was when I switched gears and became obsessed with Obedience. But it was, yeah. So I did do rally, and I did feel like I think it's really also, and Danette, you have definitely more insight on this. Like, is it the level of like the intensity of people, what they want out of the sport? Like, are there people who just want to kind of just get through? It's like with Obedience too. People who just kind of want to get through and get the title any which old way, or are you seeing tons of people who come in and they just really want that engagement piece? They really put in the work for the obedience, because you do need to have some serious obedience skills to do these rally courses. But along with it, you still need the engagement piece, right?
Right. And I see both ends of the spectrum when I judge. I see people who, you know, they're just trying to get, you know, their dog just to, you know, let's just see if we can get through novice. Mm-hmm. And then they usually do. And they're like, okay, that was fun. Now I want to see if I can get through intermediate. And they're, you know, they're not aiming for the stars. They're just doing something fun with their dog. And then mm-hmm. I see the people who are really competitive, who are vying for rock points and placements. Those folks are generally, you know, very serious about, and it's more about training the skills, because if you can do a skill quickly with precision, mm-hmm. you're usually going to be in the placements. Mm-hmm. And like speaking to what Petra mentioned before, when I compete as an exhibitor, I will memorize the course.
Right.
I memorize the course because I can't be bothered reading the signs. And I want to give my dog, who is, again, he's drivey, he's demandy, I don't want to be sitting there figuring out how to do the sign. I need to just keep him moving at a good, decent pace without rushing. To get him through the course so that he is at the optimal level of engagement where he's not checking out and waiting for me. And I'm
well,
not-
yeah. And you don't want to like have like, you don't want to be like motivatingly moving and then stall out, motivatingly right. moving and stall out. So right. when I competed, one of the biggest things that I just remember that I was like blown away by was I stopped before I went into to get my master title. I think I stopped at what is excellent. And I just remember walking the courses. And I remember the instructor I was taking rally classes with, she was like, you've got 10 minutes and you better walk that course as many times as you can fit into that 10 minutes to memorize your course and memorize your signs, like, which really held true, because, you know, the less, like the more you knew it and the less you had to think about it, the better it was going to be. It was going to go for your dog. And I just being out there walking the course, and people would stop me and be like, how do you do this sign? And I'd be like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't believe that. But I'm sure you see that a lot, right?
Yep. I do.
So like from like a judge's perspective, and you also teach, what is the thing, like, I mean, what are some of the things like you wish that you were seeing more instruction on to prepare people for success?
Yeah, I think what I've seen and heard over the years is I think there's a tremendous number of people who train for rally by themselves. They don't go to classes.
Okay.
They look at the signs and the descriptions, and they learn it on their own. I mean, I think it's great. AKC now has this, you know, library of video clips out on YouTube that show you exactly how it's done.
Right.
Each and every sign. Every single sign. There's 300 something signs.
There's an app too, isn't there? Like some apps.
Yeah, there's an app, because that's what I was doing.
Yep.
Whipping out your phone.
Whipping out my app at the trial, like, oh shoot.
Yep. And I think part of the problem is a lot of people train for rally on their own. They either don't have classes available to them, or it's too far to go, or they don't have time to, you know, the one class they find is on a night where they have something else.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you and I have talked about this. I mean, I was looking for rally classes for my new puppy. I can't find any.
Right.
You know, most of the classes are during the day. I still work full time.
Yeah.
So
yeah. And that's true. Yeah. And that's true. Like Danette, I was fortunate enough that Danette agreed to teach rally for me, like for train me. And like, I couldn't believe the response. Like immediately they signed up so fast.
With as big as rally is, I mean, it's enormous. Like I would think there would be, I would have thought there would be a lot of rally classes because they'd be super popular.
Yeah, they are super popular. Every time I've cycled in and out of teaching, you know, because I've moved around and I do still work full time, and it's a balance for me between taking classes for my dogs, and we do multiple sports. We do, you know, competition obedience, we do rally, we do agility, we do dock diving. You know, my husband wants to borrow the dog to teach him human remains, and you know, and then I have to judge. And so and now I'm teaching again. So there's a big balance of my time that I have to, you know, weigh, because the, you know, my last go round with teaching, I ended up burning myself out.
Yeah.
And that was not fun. And I don't want to do that, because I don't like to disappoint people and say, you know, I'm just, I can't teach anymore. I need to take a break.
You need to get rid of that job.
I do need to get rid of the job. The job gets in the way of my life. But I was looking for an evening class for a rally in my area. I live in Connecticut, central Connecticut. I couldn't find one. Couldn't find one on a night that I could make. So I'm back to teaching. This is how I taught Enzo rally, and this is how I'm going to teach Cash rally, is, you know, by being my little demo dog for working through, you know, the class mini courses that we do, and, you know, doing some show and tell on how to teach the skills. And I, you know, as soon as Lori asked me to teach for her program, and so I said, okay, sure. I've got a free night. I can do it. And I think the class is filled almost immediately.
They did.
So there's demand out there. And I wish more people, I know a lot of people who know a lot about rally, and they're really good. And they, you know, they know all the nuances and the ins and outs, and the, you know, they know all of the details about how the exercises should be performed. And I wish more people would teach it. Because I know there's a lot of good people out there.
So what would you suggest for people who, because it's the same in obedience too, like there's just some people who live in areas and don't have access, or they work, you know, one, two jobs, and they just can't get to a class. And so it is easy enough to get the signs and set up a course somewhere, you know, like, but what, I mean, what would you suggest for these people, you know, as, or things that you feel that would benefit these people?
I think, not to be, you know, the rally nerd again, but read
the damn rule book.
Read the damn rule book. Read chapter 2. Chapter 2 is full of important information. read the judges' guidelines. It tells that's where AKC tells the judges how to score. And read, you know, the part in the back that everybody knows about is the signs and the descriptions, and you know what is required. Bold, and you know, it's in bold face, underlined. That's the important stuff. But read the words in between the important stuff too.
Do you think people are struggling more in terms of like they don't understand the sign versus their dog is just not executing it properly, which would assume it's a training issue?
I think sometimes people don't know how to train the skills. So they kind of wing it, or they hope that the sign won't be on the course. I see that a lot with,
hilarious.
We have now a handful of signs that involve backing up, right? Back healing in reverse, if you will. There's still a lot of times that I judge that people just can't back their dogs up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's to me a fundamental skill now, because there are, you know, there's a lot of different signs, and there's 4 or 5 different signs in master level that involve backing up.
Backing up, right.
And it's not a new skill. That's been a sign in rally since 2012. Mm-hmm. So, in, you know, some of these, like the side by side spins, and then, you know, you have some people will overanalyze everything and say, well, you know, my dog spins faster than I do. I've seen people fall over. I've seen, you know, like
spin out.
There's no wording in there that says it has to be done that it has to be synchronized or done at the same time. It says
right.
The dog spins and the handler spins.
Okay,
it doesn't say what happens first. It doesn't say what happens last. It doesn't say it has to happen at the exact same second in time. It doesn't say that it has to happen at the same rate.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, I think people put too much pressure on themselves.
Okay.
You know, to.
Are there online resources for rally folks?
Like
obedience, there's a ton.
Yeah. There's a ton of Facebook groups. If you're on Facebook, there's a whole bunch of rally training Facebook groups.
Okay. But there's nobody offering online instruction, webinars.
I think there's some on Fenzy. Nicole.
There are. Okay.
Nicole does some, but she doesn't only do that. She does rally and obedience.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's so funny. I'm sitting here. This is how. I forget it. I'm stopping myself. It's going to go off the rails. I already have this like whole idea. I'm writing all these notes. I'm like, oh, well, we could do tutorials.
Well, that's where
the signs.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm like, Danette can start a whole thing.
Yeah, you could. Oh, yeah. Danette, if you want to do it, let me know. I can help you out. I have all that. I've already started a whole rally business in my head just now. I already took notes on it. And then I'm like, what am I even doing? Like, I'm not already doing 8,000 things. But
well, I'm just saying that that's what was making me think about it, because I'm like, you know, I'm thinking about people who don't have access. And yes, reading the signs, but you know, there's something to be said for having those visual. Yeah, the visual,
right.
For sure.
I need the visual. That's why I needed the app. I had to see the human do it with the dog,
right?
Because that's how my brain, like, I'd read it and go, oh, I still need to visually see it. Some people can cross it. Yep. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And when I teach my classes, and you know, I have a mini course set up, and you know, we talk about skills, we work on skills. And every time I'll say, do you want to see me run it first? Everybody always like, yes, we want to see what it's supposed to look like.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, I have focus topics every week on what I teach in my rally classes. And when we talk about managing the space for your dog, you know, that is a huge, huge problem in rally. With, you know, people think, you know, you got to be right on top of the sign to do it. And then the dog ends up knocking the sign, or they're so close to the sign, the dog can't even maneuver.
Right.
And you know, when some judges have the signs really close together, how you can work around that.
Like when I was doing rally, I remember this. I was like, holy hell. Oh. Like you literally walk in and you set up for start like 2 inches from the gate.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a hard skill.
It is a hard skill. And, you know, I worked this past class when I started my new teaching rotation. That was the first thing we talked about is setting up. There's here you're going to get another glimpse of me being a rally nerd, right? I actually went through the rally signs that we have like 300 something rally signs. And I'm looking to my piece of paper. I actually counted how many signs involve just doing a setup at heel. Okay.
Yeah.
There's a total of 69 different signs in rally that involve in some way, shape or form a sit at heel.
Wow.
22 of them are in the novice class.
And tell me what your feeling is on like the majority. Do you see a lot of trouble with that skill?
I do, because part of the reason I became a rally judge, part of the reason I wanted to become a rally judge is because when I was showing in the early days, you know, there wasn't, it was a new and different sport and there wasn't a lot of focus on course design, or, you know, there was just like, okay, you have to have, you know, 4 excellent signs and 3 advanced signs, and you have to have 2 jumps. But they didn't say how, you know, there was no advice or guidelines given as to how to make all that happen. And what you're left with is courses where the signs were really close together. It was very choppy. The dogs get demotivated. You can just see it. You can just see the dogs, you know, unraveling as the course goes on. And one of the things that I wanted to do was to design courses that give people and dogs room to move, you know, because nobody wants to do the, you know, stop, sit, get up,
right,
sit,
right.
Take 2 more steps, sit, down, sit, take 2 more steps, sit, pivot, mm-hmm. sit, you know, and that gets old really quick with the dogs. And so that's why I design my courses the way I do, where I aim for the low end of the stationary exercises and I try to space them out as much as possible.
Because you want to keep the dogs moving more.
I want to keep them dogs moving and keep them engaged and keep them happy.
Yeah. But the problem is other people aren't going to. So the dog also has to somehow be trained to deal with when it's not like that.
When they're choppy, right. Yep.
Yeah. So what do you... Yeah. And that's challenging.
It is. And so I would, you know, one of the number one skills that you have to have on your dog is to be able to, you know, take 2 steps and sit. I mean, there's a novice sign that's, you know, take 1 step, sit, take 2 steps, sit, take 3 steps, sit. You know, if you're going to practice 1 sign out of the whole 300, practice that one because it's hard. And, you know, you can help your dog through it by, you know, telling them they're right. And that's one thing I always tell my students is if you focus on telling your dog every single time that they are correct, I said, there's no room in your brain to be nervous because you're going to be so busy paying attention to your dog and good boying or yes, or wow, that was really great, you know, on every single thing they do correctly. You know, because people think, oh, I've got to get him to sit. Then I got to get him to come front. Then they got to go back to sit. And I got to do it fast because I want a placement or I want the points. And it's not about that. It's about being able to get the dog to do it accurately the very first time you ask for it.
So I wonder, there has to be something, and I can't really speak on it because I haven't actually taken a rally class. I know about people that have taken them, but, you know, I don't know enough to really speak on it. With my dogs, things like 1 step heel, 2 steps heel, 3 steps heel, my dogs would think, they all do, think that is the most fun thing on the planet. Like, I don't even have to reinforce it because they start bouncing and acting like lunatics because they're like, oh, my God, this is hilarious. So then it makes me say, what is it in my, that's not something they have to do on competition obedience, right? But they, all those things they do in all the signs I've done, which I didn't get a rock, so I'm not even pretending. I'm just saying, come to front, go around this way, go around that way. They think that's, they think it's hilarious. And so then I say, well, there has to be something different in my training, right? That's different than the majority of the rally training, that their dogs don't have those same feelings about those pieces.
Well, this is what I wanted to ask you, which probably may help answer that, is do you, like you said, Danette, you work on you focus on specific things, like specific skills. Do you feel that most rally instructors are carving that out in their classes, or are they just throwing courses out and the hours just going round and round doing, you know what I mean? Like, are rally instructors teaching the value of sits and the value, putting that value on the dog so that those skills do become self-reinforcing and motivating to the dog?
Right, right. I don't think so. I think too many people focus on doing a course.
Getting through right. the course. Yeah,
getting
right.
through a course. And I think it's kind of similar with like agility in that sense, is that, you know, they don't want to put the time in to be precise yep. on every maneuver. They want to string it together mm-hmm. and say that they can get through it, because the sooner they do that, the sooner they can enter a trial.
Mm-hmm.
And I
mm-hmm.
think a lot of people, and especially the people who are training on their own and not working with an instructor, or even, you know, training with a training buddy, you know, and there's not a real instructor involved. I think they focus too much on putting courses together and, you know, doing, and when people show, I think there's so much focus on doing the sign
mm-hmm.
and not paying enough attention to, you know, the mindset of the dog. Are they distracted? Are they paying attention? Are they on board with you? Because I see it all the time where they come through the ring gate, the leash comes off, and they've lost the dog before mm-hmm. they even start. Then the dog can't set up at start. And then, you know, the handler's getting all frustrated. And by the time they start moving on the course, the dog thinks, oh, I'm already in trouble, you mm-hmm. know? And instead of just being really super fluent on, can you get the dog through the ring gate, take the leash off, set up at the start, and still have a happy bouncy dog, you know, who can't wait for the word forward, you know, and right. I can tell those dogs that can't wait to hear that word, you know.
I think that's a big hole. I think that's the biggest hole that the AKC inadvertently created. And I'm not saying I have the answer for it. I haven't even really thought about it. But the fact that, so right, because we talked about rally was supposed to be a stepping stone to obedience. But the step between the stones may as well be like,
right.
you know,
right.
yeah, it's gigantic. And it's primarily, I think, because of engagement, right? Because they rely so much on verbals and extra hand signals and the ability to do it just good enough to get through
yep.
it.
Yep.
And that, and then that gives them enough reinforcement, like, oh, it works. So they don't, I really don't even think that the majority of people really truly understand the importance of engagement and how it would make their whole training and their performance 1,000 times just more fun and more rewarding for both of them if they had that piece. Because like, I've never seen a class listed online, for example, on engagement for rally.
Right.
I see the signs, explain the signs, or what are the judging, or this, that, and the other thing, but I don't see engagement skills for rally.
Right, right. Neither do I. And I, nor have I in the 13 years I've been.
And you know, and thinking about rally, like, it is hard. It's very difficult because what are you in the ring for, like, anywhere from what, like a minute and a half to 2.5 average.
2.5 to 3 minutes, yeah.
Okay.
Depending on the course.
It's rapid fire. Like the like one sign can have up to how many like behaviors and components
right.
to it.
Right.
Exactly. And it's just how many signs can you have all the way up through master? I mean, or like how many signs typically you think, Danette? Like
usually 15 to 18
right.
signs.
And within that, those signs are multiple behaviors. It's not just like sit for the most part, I guess,
right.
past novice.
Yep.
It's sit,
yep.
finish left. You know, like there's multiple components.
Right.
And they're one after another, after another, after another. And even though you're only in there for 2.5 minutes, that like if you don't have your dog's engagement, like that's going to just be that's hard. Super
right.
hard.
And one of the things that I see a lot when I judge is not, you know, with the green light of you can talk to your dog all you want in rally. In AKC yep. rally, right?
Yeah.
So few people praise their dogs. Mm. And, you know, like, let's just take the recall over the jump and master, okay? It involves a sit. It involves a wait. It involves a come to front. Well, come it involves the jump, the come to front, the finish, and then there's a turn after the finish. And so the dogs have to do all of those components. And, you know, not a single word of a good boy, good girl, good wait. That was nice, you know?
Not yeah, like, because you that. Can give that, you can give that feedback to the dog.
Right,
yeah.
right. And that's one of the things I definitely overtly try to do with my dogs is, you know, sit, good boy, come front. Oh, that's nice. Get around. Okay, sit. Perfect. Let's go, you know? And I try to work in those words of praise to keep that engagement up. To mm-hmm. say, yeah, mm-hmm. I just asked you to do 4 things in rapid fire succession and you nailed every one of them. Mm-hmm. So good for you. Good boy. You know, and I think a lot of people don't take advantage of the green light on the talking to your dog. You know, they're full of chit chat, but they're not full of instructions or praise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like they'll say, yeah. okay, let's go over here and let's do this other sign. No, the dogs don't understand any of that, you know.
Right.
Now,
Zeal loved that I was able to tell him he was good. Like,
yeah,
no, they do. They want to know that you're
yeah.
right because it's like I asked you to sit. Now I asked you to down. Okay. Well, was the sit wrong? Because
mm-hmm.
now you want me to down. You want me to sit again.
Right. And then people are like,
yeah.
people are
then
up against
like,
the clock, and they're
yes.
like trying to like. Go super fast and the dogs are like, holy hell.
Right. And now it's like, now I've asked you to sit again. So was the down wrong? And now they're going, oh my God, now I don't even know if I'm right. You know, and you see the dogs will just start to deflate after, you know, once they get to like the middle of the course, because now they've been, you know, their handlers are firing off all these commands at them and they're not even sure if they're right. So that would be my one
really
piece of advice
point.
To every
yeah.
handler is just tell your dog they're right, you know,
yep.
and
yep.
and don't nip at your dogs on being, you know, a half a point crooked because half points aren't scoreable in rally. So just
right.
take it, smile and go. Good job.
Right.
Let's go. You know,
right. Right.
And I see a lot of people who will, there's you. A lot of the rock people forget they can do retries because you can't do retries in master or choice, but you can in excellent and advanced. And I've seen a lot of people lose a lot of points in excellent and advanced because they forget they can do retries.
Oh, yep.
And then I've seen people do retries for things that would have maybe been a 1 point deduction. So you're trading a 1 point deduction for a 3 point deduction because, yeah. you know, you instinctively want to redo it.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Right. Are there changes you would like to see made to the sport? Like even in terms of just you know,
hold
any
up.
Of the classes.
Can we just backpedal? Just
yeah, sorry.
Hold
yeah.
that thought.
Okay.
Well, because in line with what you were saying, where you were saying how they're like, praise your dog, instead of like just talking, right? Like, and that just brought to mind, because this happens with my students sometimes, like they'll say, down, sit, stand, down, sit. And I'm like,
yeah.
I can't even process that quickly. Like, holy Hannah, you just made my head explode. Like, give the dog a second to process. And I think people don't understand that, like, on some level, dogs process the way we do. And if you're just talking and talking, it's going to be like your spouse. You're just going to drown them out and not listen at all.
Right.
Because it's like, all you're going to hear is wah, 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 wah.
Right. You shut. Yeah. You tune
and
out.
And it's annoying and it's distracting.
Totally.
So people think they're helping the dog and they're doing the opposite. And that's a big point, like, that I really take the time to explain to my students. You know, I try to give them examples and I try to say, like, the more quiet you are, like, you tune everything else out and you lean in. Wait, what did she say? Right. And then if I use my words sparingly, then they're meaningful. Wait, she said something. That means something. So I don't talk much when I train, for sure. Not when I show, and not when I train either, because I want it to be the same, because I want my words to be meaningful and I want my dogs to be able to process the information so that they can actually hear it, understand it, and respond instead of being completely, like, overwhelmed.
Right. And people, I used to tell my friends all this, you know, all the time, you know, fellow competitors and everything like that. I whisper to my dogs in the ring. I don't care if I'm in a noisy agricultural building made out of concrete and it's echoing six ways to Sunday. The dog at my knee can hear me. And it, like you said, it makes him pay closer attention. And I'm checking to see, are you still paying attention to me? You know, I see it all the time. People shout commands at their dogs. You know, it's like, he's right there. He can hear you. Stop yelling at your dog. Now sit. You know, you don't need to. You know, they're right there. They can hear you. This is in kind of the same vein as the episode you did on sportsmanship. Is when I'm judging in the ring, I hear everything. It doesn't matter how noisy the environment is.
So don't swear at your dog.
the spectators at ringside are just as loud and clear as the handler in the ring. So just, you know, word to the wise. I hear everything. I can, even if you think you're not talking loudly, the sound carries and it bounces off concrete walls and echoes all over the place. And yeah, we can hear you. So.
Good point to say that. The judges can hear you.
I can hear you. Yes. I can hear anybody being disrespectful to a steward when they're trying to check in.
Ugh,
you know?
And I
can hear, you know, you don't have to shout your commands to the dog, or you certainly don't have to do it for my benefit, because I can hear you.
All right. Sorry, Lori, I cut you off. I didn't want to lose my.
Yeah, no. Well, I just wanted to touch upon like what Danette would maybe, I guess it goes to that too. Like, what are there anything you would like the AKC to change about the sport? Like, even in regard to just signs or levels of classes or your national requirements? I know that we've talked about that a little bit.
Yeah, I would really like to see, and I think they kind of had this in mind when they came up with the choice class, but I think they missed the mark a bit. I would love to see a veterans class.
Oh, okay.
I would love to see a veterans class similar to what WCRL does, because I compete in both AKC and WCRL. And have a true veterans class, right? So don't just take out the jumps. Take out, you know, signs that involve multi changes of positions. Anything like the halt call fronts in advanced. So you can just say the veterans class, you know, will omit the following signs and just take them out.
Yeah.
Anything that's hard for an old dog to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, have a 3-leg title, have a 10-leg title. Give something for the old dogs to do that is more than just choice, because choice, you know, they're still spinning, doing the side by side spins. They're backing up. They're doing multiple position changes. And that's all hard stuff for the old dogs to do. I would love to see them come up with a true veterans class. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it would take a lot of heavy lifting to come up with a decent program, but just figure out what signs that we currently have in the inventory, you know, just take them out of rotation, but lower the required number of stationary signs, maybe have none. I don't know.
Yeah.
Just the whole, for Zeal, it's all those sits, like so many sits.
Yeah.
Because that old dogs lose their back end, right? So like his mind is strong. He wants to do everything. I still muck around with it in the yard, like, because he still wants to train when the others train. But the sits, like, it's just, and he's got a few sits in him, but there are just too many on a course.
Right.
And he can't do them all.
Yeah. And, you know, and the multiple changes of position or, you know, rising from a down is hard for old dogs, you know, and,
right.
You know, but, you know, old dogs, they can still back up. They can still, mm-hmm. you know, go.
Heal along and do, the figure eight.
There's a lot that they can still do without having to do difficult position changes and multiple sits. In position changes. So I would love to see them come up with a decent veterans program for AKC. And
how do you come up with all the courses? I have to know. Because when I think about judging that, it gives me the same thought about agility. I'm like, I could never judge agility because you have to constantly create new courses. And if you're not a creative person like me, holy Hannah, because you have to always have new courses.
Yeah, I can tell you, I don't always make new courses. I have what I'll call a footprint. And I will mix up the signs that I put in those places. Because if I have something where, let's say it calls for a left turn, well, that could be a double left about followed by a left turn. It could be a stand left turn. It could be a sit left turn. It could be a left pivot. There's a number of signs I can put in that spot.
Oh, yeah.
So what I do is I shuffle the signs on that same footprint and it ends up being a very different course. So I have probably 20 or maybe a little over 20 now different footprints, and I mix them up based on, you know, okay, I've used this one this year, so I'll put that at the bottom of the pile. And then I try to, if I'm judging a multiple trial day or a multiple trial weekend, I try to not use a lot of the same signs. Because there's such a variety of signs to choose from, I try to make sure that it's different signs or different skills from one course to another. You know, you're always going to see like a left turn and a right turn in the start and the finish. But I do try to mix up the signs so that, you know, you don't always see the same stuff. But
yeah, that's a lot of extra work from a judge, mm-hmm. right? So we're already asking the judge to do all the requirements to become a judge, to volunteer their time, spend the whole weekend. And then on top of everything, they have to come up with courses.
There is
I'm sure people complain about courses all the time.
There is a ton of prep work that goes into judging rally. There's just a mountain of prep work. Showing in judging a show, to me, is the easy part. That's easy peasy compared to the prep work involved. You know, because you know, if you're a brand new judge starting out, you need to build courses, you need to design courses. So you have to start building your inventory of courses. Then I use software products to manipulate my course. I have master printouts. I have two full sets of signs that I own that are mine. I pull all my signs ahead of time. So I will pull them by class level. So like I'll pull all my choice signs and then I will pull the master signs that are different from the you know, so I'll just have the jump. And then the excellent signs, I will pull the ones that change from master to excellent. And so I have 5 sets of signs that I will bring to a trial. And so that when I get to a trial in the morning and I show up and I take my coat off, I can just throw signs down on the floor where they need to go. And I'm ready to go. A lot of judges don't do that. I think it's more common now because I went through a period. It was around when they came out with new signs and they did a revamp to the program in 2017. And all of a sudden, clubs didn't have proper equipment anymore. They didn't have enough cones. They didn't have the right kind of cones. They didn't have all the signs. So I ended up at that point just saying, you know what, screw it. I'm just going to bring everything. And whatever they don't have, I will provide. So when I go to judge, unless I have to fly, if I have to fly, it's harder. Oh. But if I'm driving to a trial, I bring my signs, I bring my holders, the numbers, the cones, everything except the jumps.
I could see you like... walking onto the airplane with cones in your back, giant cones.
Yep. Yep. Gigantic cones. But no, when I fly, it's very difficult. I don't bring anything and I have to trust the club.
That they have it all.
And I will have many, many email exchanges leading up to that saying, okay, just so you know, because one of the things about the signs is it's laminated cardstock. And when you pile up 300 signs, it's heavy. Mm-hmm. I can't just you know, throw 2 full sets of signs and stuff in my luggage suitcase. It'll
carry on.
Yeah. In my carry on. Yeah. I'll be dragging it down the gangway.
Do you hear that, exhibitors? Everybody listen to how much work these judges put in so that you guys can show your dogs. So if you complain, if you feel like complaining, go and become a judge yourself.
Yeah. It takes me probably 4 to 6 hours to prep courses for judging assignment. And that includes printing out the masters, going to Staples, printing out all the exhibitor maps. That, you know, when you check in, you get a map that's provided by me. I go to Staples and I stand and I swear at the copying machine that all of a sudden jams or runs out of paper or starts stapling them for some reason. And so I do that and I pull all the signs ahead of time and I load my bag. My bag gets very heavy. And so
do you have to provide signs or is that just something that you
That's something
feel?
That I do to expedite when I show up for a trial. That I don't have to get there 2.5 hours early so that they can A, locate their box of signs and B, they're not in order. So we have to sift through and pull them out one at a time.
Well, what about maps? Do you have to provide the maps to the competitors or is that something that judges do out of kindness? I mean, I know they have to post them.
Yep. The only requirement by the AKC is that we post a copy.
Okay, but you go to Staples and make copies for your exhibitors?
Yes, I do. And I make my score sheets because I score on a copy of the map. I am a very visual person and I score on a copy of the map. So I write in colored pen, write exactly on the map where a deduction happened.
Okay.
So you can look at it and see... oh, you lagged between this sign and this sign. Your dog lagged. Mm-hmm. Or this sign you did incorrectly because you finished the dog the wrong way. You know, and so people, when they want to see where they lost their points, they can look at their score sheet. It usually involves no questions for me at all. They can look at it and go, oh, yeah, I did do that, didn't I? Mm-hmm. You know, and it's very easy to see. I don't, I've judged the Rally National Championship twice, 2018 and 2023. And they give you this grid and you have to bounce up and down with like, okay, so here's all the 1-point infractions. Here's all the 3-point infractions and 5-point infractions. And then you have the grid going the other way of these are the stations. So if something happens in between a station, I have to write it down at the bottom. There's a miscellaneous area down there. So I'm like always looking at the score sheet, finding where I need to write it and writing.
Oh,
I strongly dislike doing that. I can have a copy of the map on my clipboard and I almost don't need to look at it.
Right.
My hand can follow the path of the course on the clipboard, and then I just write with sometimes without even looking at it.
That makes more sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's one thing about the RNC I don't like. I judged it twice and I went as a competitor once.
Mm-hmm.
There's just too many dogs in the building.
Yeah,
too many dogs, too many handlers. It's what, over 800 dogs.
That's insanity.
Yeah, it was. I think it was almost 800 dogs this past year.
It's insanity.
And it's very, very easy to qualify for. You need 3 scores of 93 or better.
Mm-hmm.
Even at you know, like the novice level, it's really, really easy to qualify for. And I think they allow way too many entries.
Mm-hmm.
I will not this, and this is just my personal choice.
Mm-hmm.
I will not put my dog through that again
because of the amount of dogs.
It's so crowded.
It's chaotic.
I had a hard time getting to the ring. I had a hard time getting out of the ring,
mm-hmm.
and just moving throughout the building with. I mean, he was a 2-year-old intact male at the time, and it was a lot of work.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, it wasn't so bad.
Well, I think it's so hard too because, you know, a lot of people that do rally, which is in a way similar to obedience, except rally has, you know, a bazillion more people at nationals than obedience does. But it's a similar scenario in terms of prep, right? Like we have 1 to 2 ring trials. If we have a 3 ring trial these days, it's really big. A lot of places in a lot of parts of the country, they don't even have that many. So how do you prepare your dog for that amount of distraction, for that amount of noise and chaos, not just for all the multiple rings, and so all the weird things the dogs are going to see and hear in the ring, just the whole thing. And I think that what happens a lot, from my understanding, people I've talked to, students I've had, is like, they kind of just train like they always train, and then they go there and they're like, oh God, it was a disaster. Well, oh my God, you have to train specifically for that environment.
Which is really hard to replicate.
Really hard.
You know, you've got in 2 of the rings, you've got these big TV cameras on a mm-hmm. platform looming over the corner of the ring,
mm-hmm.
You know, where, and you've got, you know, all sorts of people. There's just wall to wall people.
Mm-hmm.
around every single ring, and there's just, you know, picking your way through the crowd is difficult, especially
annoying.
For dogs
it's
that,
annoying,
you know, yeah, and there's a lot of pressure getting through the crowds. And
well, I just, like, I always go back and think about, like, going to a fair with all the strollers.
Yes. Oh,
and
God,
I'm like, I get so freaking annoyed.
Yes.
You know what I mean? I'm like shoot me now, get me out of here.
Yeah, it's like trying to take your dog to the state fair.
Yeah.
Only it's indoors. Yeah. It was just not my cup of tea as far as a competition goes, and you know, in a high level competition, I would be much more willing to entertain the thought of going to the NOC than to return to the RNC for that. Just for that reason,
I'm so surprised. I didn't know what the qualifications were, and I'm really surprised. I mean, it's not like I don't, you know, I want to say, well, everybody doesn't deserve to be there, kind of thing. But I mean, nationals are nationals, right? Like for us to qualify for obedience, like, it's pretty stringent, and there are a fair number of people that can get decent scores or that even have OCHs, and they don't qualify because it's hard, which, it, in my opinion, it should be because
it's
a special event, right?
Right.
It's something special. And so everyone knows that you have to qualify to even get invited, right? And it's an honor.
for a lot of people, even if they can't go, to get invited is an honor. Why? Because it's not easy to get invited, right?
Like, right. There's no such thing as a rally not regional qualifier.
Yeah.
Right. And yeah. I think it's just way too easy to qualify for that event that's on a national scale. And I think, you know, I think the requirements should be more in line with what the NOC is. You know, either you have a ROC or you can, you know, have such and such criteria that shows that you're on your way to a ROC.
Yeah.
You know, I think it creates that super overcrowding atmosphere, which I think takes away from the ability of some really good dogs to perform to the level that they're capable of.
Yeah, I agree.
It's crazy. Yeah. But huge kudos to the dogs that can. I mean, you're always going to have some dogs that can handle the environment better than others. But still, I do think it's important for people to kind of process that, like, you really, if you are going to go, you really need to do some extra preparation, right? Like what we do when we are going to the NOC, we do very specific training for that because of the unique challenges that the dogs are going to face in that environment that they don't face at trials. Right. And I think you'd have to do the same thing, like in my head already, like, you know, my brain like rapid fires, like, well, if my dog qualified, oh gosh, I would have to teach them this and this and this and this and this and this, all to give to better. Obviously, you can never mimic the exact environment, but, you know, all the different pieces you'd have to introduce the dog to so that at least they have some preparation.
Right.
For that
type of an atmosphere.
Yeah. So hard.
Yeah. You know, you talked about what, you know, some of the changes that I would like to see made. One of them, they just did make, and that's they changed what's required to become a judge.
Yeah. That's right.
And that was huge. And I think, I think a lot of people, had made that type of a suggestion to the AKC over the years, and they are finally changing it as of January 1st, 2026. And that is, you can become a rally judge if you have a ROC on your dog. There's so many people, so many really good rally handlers who would make phenomenal judges, but they don't do obedience. They devote their lives to doing the sport of rally. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that AKC is now recognizing that pool of people, because I didn't even know.
So you had to be an obedience judge to be a rally judge?
No, you had to have obedience titles on a dog. You had to have a CEX. Well, the current requirements for the rest of 2025 is you have to have a CDX on a dog and have handled a dog up to an RE. And have so many, I think, what, five legs of an RM rally master title on a dog. So they're changing that to say you can have either a ROC championship on your dog or a rally master title and a CDX.
Nice. Yeah.
So, but for a lot of people, they don't want to do obedience. Mm-hmm. They devote their lives to doing rally and they do it really, really well. And there's so many people I know personally who would make phenomenal rally judges, but they would never fit the criteria.
That's a really good change. Yeah.
I'm really glad to see that change coming. So
that's really good.
I think that'll open the door for a bunch of folks, and I'm going to be right there prodding them along, like Tibby was prodding me, saying, "So when are you going to become a rally judge?" You know.
Oh, that's great.
So what do you love about judging and what do you find the most challenging about judging?
I think by far the most challenging is double trial days, where you have a separate trial in the morning and a separate trial in the afternoon. It's a lot of prep work. So you have double the prep work.
Yeah.
And you have, like, I put the effort in to make sure I don't have a lot of the same signs with the same skills. I don't always, you know, hit a home run on that, but I try. And it makes for a very long day, because in order to get two full trials done in one day, you have to limit the entries. So you're constantly awarding ribbons, changing the course, judging, awarding ribbons, changing the course. And then you usually end up with a very early start and a very short lunch break, because in between you clear the ring, put all the sign holders back in order, and then you lay down your next course. I usually like to lay out the next course before I break for lunch. But then you have, you know, the whole next trial to get through. It usually ends up being a very long day. And yeah, it's very mentally...
I was going to say, like, I'd be drooling.
Right. Pay very close attention to all the rapid fire things that you're doing is hard. And I learned the hard way. When I judge, I am so focused on watching the teams, I don't blink as often as I should. And my eyes get dried out because I'm not blinking.
Wow.
And I will go like the entire day, you know, blinking very seldom, and my eyes get dried out. So I have to put in eye drops and things like that. So it's hard on your feet, you know, as judges get older and you're judging on concrete or gravel all day long, or if you're outdoors in the sun or in the rain, or, you know, undulating grass where, you know, you got little holes here and there, it takes a toll on your feet, your ankles, your knees, your back.
I always get exhausted just thinking about judging after hearing everything that you have to do. I'm like, oh my God.
It doesn't make you want to run out and become a rally judge, really?
No. it makes me look at all of you even more like superheroes, because like I've said it before, I cannot even watch a freaking full run of obedience without losing my train of thought. So just the whole, you know, and all the preparation you do and the planning like that, I would be the same way. And so I would be, you know, all those extra, I never even crossed my mind that you guys are doing all this extra work before you even get there. And then, like you said, oh, I bring my own signs, because if they don't have the signs, the extra time. And I'm like, oh my God, there's so much more to this than I even knew. And I already thought it was one of the hardest jobs possible is being a judge. Like, because of that constant concentration and being on your feet, and, you know, people aren't always the kindest, and like, it's so hard.
Yeah. And, you know, like I said, you know, I had an exhibitor approach me and actually went to the rep saying, you know, since when is it an NQ to walk by a sign? And I'm like, it's in the rule book. You know, I've been doing this long enough that, you know, I know I'm right. And, you know, and it's in chapter 2, page 36, look it up. And it's just, you know, I had to take time away from the ring. I had to step out of the ring. I had to have a chat with the rep, and, you know, it just takes extra time, you know, and an already long day. It just takes extra time.
Yeah.
And the person should have just looked it up themselves.
Exactly.
Right. Or asked a friend, you know, or asked somebody else that is knowledgeable about doing it. And, you know, but
yeah, it's challenging. It's very challenging. You know, hopefully part of why we do this is so that people can hear all this and just have a deeper appreciation for what judges do for everybody. Like, it's beyond clear. You would never do all that prep work if you didn't really care about doing like a beyond awesome job. Like, you're not just showing up, putting in the time and jetting out of there. Like, you're putting so much thought and so much effort into giving everybody the best possible experience, and you're coming at it from
you know, also having the benefit of being an exhibitor and competing. And then, and people really need to understand that because, like I said, I didn't know, you know, and I think that should give everybody, in general, everybody should be grateful to judges anyway. Preach that constantly, all the time. Stop complaining. If you can do it better, go get your judge's license and prove to everybody how much better you are. But those people don't. They're the ones, they just stand there and complain. And, you know, it makes me crazy. Everybody should be grateful. Everybody should be thankful. Everybody should be appreciative, no matter what. And that should be, you know, everybody should set an example and act like that. And if everybody does, it'll start to bleed into the positive direction instead of the negative direction. Because without the judges, we have no trials. We tend not to have enough judges anyway. And then to hear the sheer amount of time and effort you guys are putting into this, of your own time, you are not getting paid for this. Like, right. Hence the fact that you still have a full-time job. Or else you could just quit, right? Yeah, people really need to appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it does. It makes my day at the end of a trial to have somebody say, you know, I really enjoyed your courses today. You know, that makes it worth the while for me, you know, because that's something that maybe I bring that the next judge, you know, didn't bring.
Right.
That they enjoyed my course design, and you know, I try not to make them too easy. I find the mostly the rock competitors, they want a challenge. Uh-huh. You know, they don't want another boring course that they can do in their sleep. They rise to the challenges. And, you know, so I try not to make it, you know, stupid hard, but I try to make it at least interesting. And so I, you know, it does make my day at the end of the day when somebody says, I really enjoyed your courses today.
And it just takes a minute to do that, guys.
That's right.
Yeah. Super interesting.
Really good.
Yeah. Any final thoughts? Anything you want to share, ask, preach?
This is the time we shout out our preaches.
Yeah. You know, praise your dog in the ring. You know, tell them they're doing it right. You know, when your rapid fire commands at them, just like sit, yes, down. Oh, that's awesome. Sit, yes, yes, perfect, go. You know, and just it's not a lot of effort. And if you focus on trying to pay attention to praise, you know, even half of what the dog does right, it takes processing power out of your brain to be nervous. Or to be worried about, gee, will I get my 10 master points? It just, you know, if you focus on the components and the skills, the points will come. The points will be there.
And it's supposed to be fun. You're supposed,
supposed to be fun. Yes.
About your teamwork with your buddy.
Right. Because if your dog has a miserable time in the ring, they're not going to want to play your game for very long.
Yeah.
You know, make it interesting. Make it fun for the dogs. You know, I would rather see a dog having fun and maybe they goof up and they mess up a sign in master or whatever and you don't get any master points. But you know what? Your dog had a great time. They're going to want to do it again.
Praising them is going to boost their ego and build their confidence. And the more you do that, that's going to build over time. And then your dog's going to start going in the ring and going, I'm really good at this. I know what to do. Like, I'm always doing it right. And they're gonna love it. I mean, you would feel the same way if someone praised you and was like, good, that's it, good job, versus someone that's always nitpicking you and saying, nope, not good enough. Nope. You know, it's the same.
Right.
Or if somebody's telling you, you know, like to do 15 different things, sit, down, stand, come, front, finish, you know, left, right. You know, get around, spin, you know, down, wait, stay, front, you know, and you're like, did I do any of that right? You know, was any of that good?
They have no idea because you're not saying. And in obedience, the dogs worry about that because we can't do it. And here you have a great opportunity. And you're right. Like, I think that's part of why Zeal liked it, too. It's like, you know, we're doing little pieces and I'm like, super buddy. Oh, good. That's it. You know, I'm constantly telling him what a good job he's doing. And he's like, oh, this is like the best, you know?
Yeah.
Right, right, right. So important.
Awesome. Well, this was so, so good. As if now I feel horrible asking you to do this after you told us how much time you already have to dedicate just to your judging and your teaching and everything else. So we really extra, extra, extra thank you.
We really do.
Yeah,
we really
this was do. Fun. Thank you. I really enjoyed this. This was fun.
Yeah, you shared a lot of really good information. Really, it was really beneficial.
Yeah.
Really
now you got my brain churning on online teaching resources. Like,
DM me.
Actually be teaching and instructional in nature.
DM me. I have ideas, baby. I have ideas.
Market that shit quick. Hurry up.
I got you, girl. I have it all written down already. And I'm
say?
Yeah, I have, you know, I just started back up teaching, and it's like I dug out my old teaching plan, and you know, I teach signs in groups. So it's kind of like, you know, teaching obedience skills that apply across the levels. I teach it the same way, you know, so we work on, you know, anything that involves a call front, we do at the same time. Doesn't matter if it's a master level sign,
right?
It's a novice sign. Mm-hmm. Call front is a call front is a call front, you know?
Right.
And so we work on them all together, and it takes some of the spookiness away from, you know, okay, I earned my title today, do I want to move up?
Right.
You know, and it takes that, you know, big scary feeling away of moving up to the next level, and oh my god, the signs are all different. Well, they may be different, but the components are all the same.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think something where people can access something online like that is just another way of, it's just a different way of support for them that they can access, you know, that people who can't get to a class or the signs just aren't cutting it, you know, reading the sign or watching a short clip, like they really do need maybe an opportunity to get some feedback, online feedback, however, which way you could do it. Like that's just I think that would be a really good idea for.
And to teach the signs in tiny little pieces, because I think
everybody
teaches the whole sign in one thing. So when I was doing it with Zeal, I was like, oh, I already know why people are going awry, because of the way, like, I had to break things into smaller pieces so he could be successful. So even then, back then, my brain was already like going, you know, had all these ideas. I have so much free time, so.
Yeah, you know. Exactly.
Get to it.
All right. Great job, everybody. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Danette. Really
My
good.
Pleasure. My pleasure.
All right.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.